22. Maracy had plenty of time to think as they traveled southward toward the mountains. Alec guessed the trip would take about 2 hours, which surprised her. She'd imagined an airship to be a fast-moving vehicle, but this was likely slower than a train. Still, being able to proceed there in a straight line instead of having to follow the landscape was a distinct advantage. Even with the fans whirring in their casings, the airship seemed to spend much of its time gliding. Alec would increase their height or lower it, trying to find favorable winds, and he complained that he didn't know the airstreams of this area. He did his navigation using devices she didn't recognize, along with some startlingly accurate maps of the lower basin. How often had these people prowled through the skies up here, hidden in the darkness, observing and making their maps? Most of the others slept, comfortably tapping warmth as Alec had taught them. When Maracy considered sleeping herself, she could not banish the image of falling from one of those doorways and awakening just as she hit the ground, even with the waist belts tying them all in. Wayne gave her something else to help with the pain, though he wouldn't say what it was. It felt good, though, and she could mostly ignore her aching side. She settled into the seat beside Alec and chatted with him. She felt guilty, as that required him to wear the medallion that let him translate, but he seemed as eager to talk as she was. She could not say whether that was because he was starved for interaction following his incarceration, or if he wanted to be distracted from thinking about the friends he'd lost during his journey. Over the next 2 hours, he told her more about the medallions they wore and the legends of the Bands of Mourning. In Alec's lore, the Lord Ruler had filled them with a great deal of every attribute, but had also crafted them to grant any person who used them the ability to draw those forth, a kind of challenge to mankind to find them, along with a warning not to. Alec didn't seem to consider this a contradiction at all. He also spent more time telling her about life where he was from, a place over the mountains, across the entire southern roughs and the wastelands beyond. A distant, wonderful place where everyone wore masks, though not everyone wore them in the same way. Alec's own people preferred to change masks according to their professions or moods. Not each day, certainly, but it wasn't uncommon for them to change their masks as often as a lady in Ellendale might change her hairstyle. There were other groups, though. One gave a mask to each child, and those only changed once, when they reached adulthood. Alec claimed that these people, called hunters, even grew into their masks somehow, though Maracy found that difficult to believe. Still other people, to whom he referred derisively, wore only plain, unpainted masks until they did something to earn a more ornate one. "They are the fallen," he explained to her, wagging one hand before himself in a gesture she didn't understand. "They were our kings, yeah, before the world froze. They offended the Jagenmeier, which is why everything went wrong and—" "Wait," Maracy said, speaking softly so the others could sleep. "The Jagenmeier?" he asked. "It didn't translate." "You don't have a word for it in your language, then?" "It's like a god, only not."
"Very descriptive."
Surprisingly, he lifted his mask, something she'd only seen him do that once, when he'd knelt before the masks of his friends. He didn't seem to consider it an infraction of any sort, and kept talking. She liked being able to see his face, even if his wispy beard and mustache looked a little ridiculous. It made him look younger than he really was, unless he was lying about being 22.
"It's like," he said, grimacing, "like a thing that runs the world, yeah? When something grows or dies, the Jagenmeier makes that happen. There is Herr and his sister Fru, who is also his wife. And she makes things stop, and he makes things go. But neither can make life on their own," Maracy said.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"Ruin and preservation," she said. "The old terrace gods. They're one now. Harmony."
"No, they were always one," Alec said, "and always apart. Very odd, very complex. But anyway, we were talking about the fallen, yeah? They work doing anything they can to relieve their burden of failure. A compliment means a lot to them. But you have to be careful because if you tell them they did well, they might take your compliment to heart and travel back to their people to tell everyone. Then you might be called in to testify about how good a job they did, so they can change their mask. And their language. That's a real pain. I speak a smattering of it. Always useful, so you don't have to wear the medallion. And it makes my head spin, as if I've been flying too high for way too long.
She smiled, listening to him go on, gesturing wildly as he spoke, which she figured was only natural if everyone's faces were covered all the time.
"Do you speak many languages?" she asked as he took a breath, finally pausing his narrative.
"I don't even speak my own that well," he said with a grin. "But I'm trying. Seems like a good skill for a skimmer pilot to have, since it's often my job to pilot Wheedlk and take people between ships or towers. And if I'm going to sit half the day in a class, I figure it should be something useful. Though mathematics has..."
"Class?" Maracy asked, frowning.
"Sure. What do you think we do all day on the ship?"
"I don't know," Maracy said. "Swab decks, tie ropes, trim... stuff?
Deckhand types of things."
He looked at her, eyes bulging, then slapped his mask down.
"I'm going to pretend that you did not just compare me to a common low shipman, Miss Maracy. You have to be something more special than that if you want to fly. We're expected to be gentlemen and ladies. We've thrown people overboard for not knowing the proper dance moves."
"What, really?"
"Yeah, really."
He hesitated.
"All right, so we tied a rope to his foot first."
He made a gesture she had started to realize was something like a smile or a laugh.
"He dangled there below Brunstell for a good 5 minutes, cursing up a storm. He never got the cistern three-step wrong again, though. And Svel always said to him..."
Alec trailed off, growing silent. "And?" Maracy prodded.
"Sorry. His mask. Svel, I mean. On the wall."
"Oh."
The conversation died, Alec staring out the front of the ship, then making a few adjustments to their heading. Outside, the landscape was dark, save for a few pinpricks of towns, now far to their left. Though they'd initially skirted the Saren Range, Alec had moved the skimmer into the mountains about a half hour back. Now they flew over the tops of the peaks, having ascended higher than they'd been when flying over the basin.
"Alec," Maracy said, resting her hand on his arm. "I'm sorry."
He didn't respond. And so, hesitantly, fully aware that she was probably doing something taboo, she reached out and lifted his mask. He didn't stop her, and the motion revealed eyes staring sightlessly, a tear trickling down each cheek.
"I'm never going to see them again," he said softly. "Brunstell is crashed. I'll never serve on him again. Hell, I'm never going to see home again, am I?"
"Of course you will," Maracy said. "You can fly there. Wheel won't last on the stone I've got,"
he said, wiping the tears first from one cheek, then the other.
"The stone?"
"Fuel,"
Alec said, glancing at her.
"What, you think Wheel flies on clouds and dreams?"
"I thought it flew on Allomancy."
"Allomancy pushes the impellers," Alec said. "But Etmetal is what supports it."
"I don't think that one translated either," Maracy said, frowning.
"Here, see?"
Alec said, kneeling down and opening the compartment where he'd put the little cube that Waxillium called an allomantic grenade. It was attached to a metal shell which glowed softly at the center. Alec pointed, and to the side she could see a greater light blazing with a pure whiteness. A stone, burning like a limelight.
"Or like Allomancy itself," Maracy realized.
"What kind of metal is it, though?"
"Etmetal," Alec said, shrugging. "There's a little bit in the primer cube, too, to make it work. A lot more to make the ship like the wheel go, and a lot lot more to get Brunstell into the air. You don't have this metal?
I don't think so, Maracy said.
Well, what we have in Wheelg, it'll be enough to fly us a day or two. After that, we need an Allomancer pushing full time. So unless His Greatness the Drowsy One back there wants to fly with me all the way back, I'm stuck, yeah?
You said there was more on Brunstell.
Yeah, but they have it, he grinned. At first, the evil ones didn't know how to care for it. Got some wet. That was a good day.
Wet?
Etmetal explodes if it gets wet.
What kind of metal explodes if you put it in water?
This kind, he said. Anyway, you're evil men. They got most of ours.
And we're going to stop them, Maracy said firmly. We'll get your crewmates back, stick you on your ship, or some of these skimmers if the big one won't fly anymore, and send you home.
He settled back in his seat, closing the panel under the dash.
That's what we're going to do,
he agreed, nodding. Then he eyed her, his mask still up.
Of course, your people don't have what we do. No airships at all. So they'll simply let me and mine soar away. No information demanded with this technology.
Rusts. He was clever. Maybe we can give the governor some technology, she said, like a few medallions. Then promise him trade between our two peoples, fueled by the goodwill of having helped you and yours get home. That will erase some of the shame of what Suit did.
There are those from my lands who might find your basin up here tempting, with no defenses against attack from above.
All the more important to have allies among your people.
Maybe, he said, pulling his mask back down. I appreciate your genuine nature. You have no mask to hide your emotions. So odd, but welcome in this case. Still, I have to wonder if this will be more complicated than you say. If we do find the relics, what you call the bands of mourning, who keeps those? They are ours, yet I cannot see your metalborn lord letting them slip away from him.
Another difficult question.
I honestly don't know, Maracy said. But you could say we have as much a claim to them as you, since it was our ruler who created them.
A ruler you killed, he pointed out. But let us not argue about it, yeah? We will find what we find, and then determine what to do.
He hesitated.
I must tell you something, Miss Maracy. It is possible we will find nothing at the temple but destruction.
She frowned, settling on her seat, wishing he still had the mask up so she could read his face.
What do you mean?
I told you of the ones who came seeking the temple, Alex said.
The hunters, Maracy said.
He nodded.
They were warriors in the time before the freezing. Now they hunt answers to what happened to us, and secrets to making it never happen again. Miss Maracy, I have known many, and they can be good people, but very, very stern. They believe that the bands of mourning were left with us as a test, but opposite the one we all assume. They think the Sovereign intended to see if we would take the power when we should not. And so...
What? Maracy asked.
Their ship, he said, looking toward her, that came up here first. It carried bombs, great ones, made from the Etmetal, intended to destroy the bands. They did not succeed, it is said. But anything could have happened. The place of the temple is said to be frozen beyond anything else in the world. A dangerous place for my kind.
He shivered visibly, then looked longingly at the medallion set on the desk before him.
Go ahead, Maracy said. Put it on.
He nodded. They'd had to do this several times during the flight so far, letting Alec warm himself with the ferrochemical device. Maracy wore one herself, comfortably warm, though up this high the air was probably freezing. Alec settled back, and Maracy, curious, picked up the connection medallion that he had set down. She turned it over in her fingers, noting the sinuous lines down the center, dividing it into separate metals. Iron for weight, duralumin for connection, and most importantly, nicrosil, to give her the ability to tap metals in the first place. She knew enough metallic theory to identify the metals, but connection? What did it actually do? And how did that make him speak a language, of all things? Suddenly feeling foolish, she smiled and took off her medallion. The ship immediately dipped due to her restored weight. She let out a squeal of alarm and immediately donned the weight connection one instead, then blushed, making herself light again, as Waxillium whipped his gun out and leaped to his feet. So he hadn't been sleeping, but eavesdropping. He looked around to see what had caused the lurch. None of the others stirred. Wayne kept snoring. Marcy held up the disc to Alec, then tapped connection. She waited for some reaction inside of her, but it didn't seem to do anything.
"We've been foolish," she said. "I could have been wearing this all along and speaking your language. Then you could have been warm the entire time."
Alec grinned at her, then said something completely unintelligible. "What's going on?" Waxillium said from behind her.
"Nothing,"
Marcy said, blushing again. It wasn't working. Why wasn't it working? Alec gestured to her, and she switched back to her previous medallion, working very carefully this time to avoid causing a jolt, but mostly failing. How did he transition between them so smoothly? He made a gesture, like a hand drawn across his face, that she thought indicated a smile.
"Clever, but it won't work on you."
"Why?"
"Because we're in your lands," he said. "The visitor always has to wear the medallion. It's filled with connection, yeah? Blank connection to no place. But connection can't just be connected to nothing. So when you tap it, it reaches out and connects you to the place where you are. Makes your soul think you were raised in this place instead. So your language changes."
Marcy frowned, though Waxillium perked up, pulling up between their two seats.
"Curious," he said. "Very curious." "It is the way of the world," Alec said with a shrug.
"Then why do you have an accent still?" Marcy asked. "If your brain thinks it was raised here."
"Ah," Alec said, raising his finger. "My soul thinks I was raised here in your lands, but it knows that I am Malwish by descent, and that parents are from Wistlow. So I cannot help but have an accent, yeah? I got it from them. It is how the medallions always work."
"Strange," Marcy repeated.
"Yeah," Alec agreed.
But Waxillium was nodding as if it made perfect sense to him. "Those mountains to the right," Waxillium said, pointing. "Those are some taller peaks than the ones we've been passing."
"Yeah," Alec said. "Good eye, O observant.
Stop with the titles."
"Yes, confusing,
Alec took a deep breath.
"Those are the peaks we're seeking. Getting close. We'll have to climb Wheelgup even higher. Cold temperatures. Dangerous altitudes."
He hesitated as Waxillium pointed at something ahead. Difficult to see, but distinct once Marcy noticed it. Light, hovering in the darkness. Only a glimmer, but stark against the blackness.
"The Saren Range is uninhabited," Waxillium said, "except in a few of the valleys. Too cold, too many storms."
"So if there's a light," Marcy said.
"Suda's left on his expedition," Waxillium said, standing up straight. "Time to wake the others."